Get ready.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Weekly Cooldown. I am Kami Jace, your host.
And I'm Paul Henderson, your semi-regular guestish co-host. I actually don't know if I'm supposed to be saying guestish host or guestish co-host. We can leave this in. I've been saying co-host.
Work. Co-host works.
We have host written in the script.
Yeah. Co-host works, though. I'll update the script.
And I'm Paul Henderson, your semi-regular guestish co-host. Excellent. Feeling confident about it now.
And if you're joining us for the first time, this is the show where we get to know the gaming news of the week, and we get to know our guest. No guest this week, it's just me and Paul.
I mean, I'm guestish.
Guestish? It is episode 153 of the Weekly Cooldown. It is April 29th. It is almost May. May
Good
time.
Lord, this month has just flown the fuck by. Yeah. I don't know about you, but it feels like just 2 days ago we were dealing with April Fools, and now the month's like most of the way over.
Mm-hmm. I feel like January was yesterday. It's going by.
But Marcy messaged me yesterday, was like, "Hey, just a reminder, rent's coming due in a few days." And I'm like, "No, it's not. I've got 2 weeks." Oh,
no,
no, no. Snuck up on me.
Happening.
God.
Car. And there's other things happening. So we're going to get you these headlines, and then we're going to get into the rest of the show. Mm-hmm. I'll start us off. Game Freak has announced that they will be implementing an optional 4-day work week for their employees. In a recent press release from the developers behind most of the Pokemon video games, Game Freak laid out their plans for flexibility in the workplace. The new plan would allow employees to work 4-day work weeks on a monthly basis. Game Freak emphasized in their release that workers need time to focus on childcare and health. The release also details a new option for employees to work completely remote at home. What the release did not say up front is that employees who choose this new policy may see a pay cut of up to 20%, according to reports, and it is not available to contract employees.
Of course not. God. I have thoughts about that, yeah. Microsoft is holding a showcase in June focused on Xbox and Bethesda. The aptly named Xbox and Bethesda... Bethesda? The aptly named Xbox and Bethesda Game Showcase has little detail, but Microsoft says it will include a diverse lineup of games coming to Xbox, as well as upcoming releases to Game Pass. Rumors and talks suggest that we will learn more about Bethesda's sci-fi RPG Starfield, which is still seemingly on track for its launch for Xbox and PC in November. The event will take place virtually on June 12th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes. Ubisoft has a new title in the works, currently named Project Q. Mm-hmm. Leaks over the past few months has suggested that the game will be released for PC, but we haven't heard much from the developer until recently. Ubisoft says the game is a team battle arena game, PvP team battle arena game, and clarified that it is not a battle royale game, and also felt the need to clarify that we, quote, don't have plans to add NFTs to this game. We'll talk more about Project Q after the headlines.
Yeah, I do have a couple thoughts about that as well. Mm-hmm. And finally, Naoko Yoshida, Final Fantasy XIV's producer and director, has some thoughts about 6.1 and beyond for the game. According to reports, Yoshida is making some decisions on what 7.0 will look like and has said that the 6.x series of patches has largely been completed in terms of what the plot and main scenario were going to look like. Yoshi P, as some people may know him, in the cash, also said that features like Island Sanctuary, which was pushed back to patch 6.2, is coming along smoothly. On a related note, Yoshi P is also urging the players to be kinder to each other in Final Fantasy XIV's new very popular PvP mode, mm-hmm. Crystalline Conflict. According to the producer-director, the team has received complaints of players spamming the nice job automatic text quick chat in-game, and then setting off fireworks on their teammates' and opponents' dead bodies. Yoshi P MVP told players that he considers this behavior unacceptable, and also that lethargic play, which is AFK play, or play that essentially is you taking yourself out of the game, is not allowed, and reminded players that the team reserves the right to suspend players for between 3 to 20 days if the behavior persists.
Mm-hmm. And those are just some of the headlines from this week. If there's any headlines, of course, that you want to talk about that we're not going to get to in this show, of course, reach out at CommyJace Gaming on Twitter and WK Cooldown on Twitter as well, and we'll chat.
Man, I gotta say, what a fucking come around on the PvP for Final Fantasy XIV, huh?
It's so much fun.
It's wild, because Final Fantasy XIV, for as long as A Realm Reborn PvP has existed, has been wildly unpopular. It's been considered unpolished, it's been considered unbalanced, and it's just been considered not fun, poorly paced, and then Crystalline Conflicts comes out. First of all, every job in Final Fantasy XIV got a rework for its PvP. Roles were kind of diminished, although not entirely removed from PvP. Every job was sort of given utility and ways to handle different aspects of all the different roles. And every job was sort of tweaked in a way to really lean into the power fantasy in a way that they can't really do in the PvE. Like, Dragoon has, first of all, every single job has a unique limit break now, which is fucking incredible. The big thing is all the DPS limit breaks are unique, all the support limit breaks are unique. Dragoon's limit break is just they jump in the air for five, it's a Doomfist ult is what it is, Doomfist Overwatch. You jump in the air for 5 seconds, and when you come down, you blow everybody up for 2/3 of their health. It's wonderful.
It's great. It's really great. And it feels like everyone is now just geared to do damage. Like, no one, even healers are like, I don't need to heal you. I'm just going to hit this guy.
Yeah, actually, White Mage is kind of overbalanced right now because it's got such good CC. White Mage and Warrior have crazy good CC, and they've been causing a lot of problems in the solo queues for people.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a lot of really good gear behind and really good, like, cosmetic stuff behind PvP, too. So that's kind of been making it popular for people. And it just feels like it's been a perfect... I mean, I'm honestly amazed that Squeenix was able to figure this out and pull it around, because PvP was in such a rough state for so long. For a lot of people, the only reason they would do PvP is they'd hit knockout their frontlines roulette for the day for the XP, and that's it. And you'd see a lot of people just sort of going AFK, and I still don't think frontlines is that good. It's kind of just...
It is what it is.
It is kind of just what it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like big numbers of people mashing into each other. But I'm sorry, there's a fly that has been flying around my room all day, and I've been trying to kill it, and it's been making me lose my fucking mind. So if you hear me clapping randomly during the podcast, that's me trying to get this goddamn fly. The PvP in Final Fantasy XIV is really fun now. I did a little bit of Crystalline Conflict, and I've done some more frontlines, and it's really fun. And Crystalline Conflict is in Wondrous Tales now, so that's a fun little thing.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's good. I've been playing nothing but PvP games for the past week. Aside from Crystalline Conflict, Bloodhunt is finally out.
Ah.
And I don't know if it's the setting. I'm pretty sure it's just the setting, but I really like it, and I'm having a lot of fun.
Wait, I thought it was already out.
No, it just came out this Wednesday.
Well, wait, then what is the Battle Royale game everybody's been playing?
That's Bloodhunt.
So it was in Early Access?
No, it's out as of this Wednesday.
I thought people were playing it on Steam before. Hold on.
No, well, there was a beta. Like, I think you even
Early Access version was released September 7th, 2001, and officially came out yesterday. Oh, it was in Early Access. Okay, I was right.
And, I see. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Is it free?
Yes, it is free.
Cool.
And I don't usually like Battle Royale games, but I'm really into this one. Having a good time. And then also I got into the Overwatch 2 beta, and I've been playing that, so I'm like...
Yeah! What have you been thinking?
I'm all PvP'd. I like it. I feel like I'm struggling because it's 5v5, though.
Yeah.
I am not used to that gameplay for Overwatch, so I'm like, this feels weird.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. The disclaimer, I work for Blizzard. Opinions are my own. 5v5 feels weird. Playing tank is like a survival horror now.
Yeah.
I think I said that before. I was able to say a little bit about it without going too much into it. But yeah, no, like I'm when I play tank, I basically play Reinhardt. That's mm-hmm. all I play. And playing Reinhardt now is like, oh my god, it's terrifying. It's like yeah. if you die, the whole rest of your team is just screwed.
The playing supports is like that too. I queued in a little this morning, and I could only really get fast queues as support. So I was like, fine, you know, yeah. whatever, big deal. And I started as Moira, and I was like, okay, this isn't mm-hmm. so bad. But then I was like, why is all the DPS here and I'm yep. alone?
So two big things that are changed in the design philosophy in Overwatch 2. Lot less CC, big mm-hmm. deal, lot less CC. And also supports just generally don't output as much healing as they used to. They took healing down across the board. Took removed some barriers from the game, not a ton, but obviously also only having one tank changes that a lot. Right. Have you tried out new Orisa yet?
No, not outside of training.
She's buck wild.
I'm really excited.
She's no longer a barrier tank. She's got a sort of temporary shield that she can put in front of her, but also she's got a javelin now instead of halt. She just throws a fucking javelin at you.
It's great. It's great. I love it. I was really into it in the training, but I want to play Sojourn and I can't get into any damage dealing cues because everyone wants to play Sojourn. I liked Sojourn in training, so I want to try them out.
Sojourn's cool. I think I'm allowed to talk about this now in the alpha. Back when it was just internal people and like streamers and pros, we were watching because you know since the pools were so small, we were running into a lot of Overwatch League pros and. Whenever an Overwatch League player or a coach would get on Sojourn, you didn't get to exist. it was terrifying. So you get survival horror. God.
I'm really, really into it. I love the idea that you shoot people until you get a railgun charge, and then you shoot them with the railgun.
No, it's fun. It feels like an inverse of Widowmaker almost. It's like you instead of popping people and then you spray them to finish off, it's like you spray somebody and then you pop them to finish off.
I love it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
What else have we been playing this week?
Stanley Parable came out yesterday.
Again?
Yeah, again. So, for anybody who doesn't remember the Stanley Parable, Stanley Parable was a source mod that came out back in 2011. It was fairly underground. Not a lot of people played it. I didn't play it. And it got re-released on Steam back in 2013, called also the Stanley Parable. It was its own thing. It was a Source Engine game rather than just being a Source mod. I don't remember. I think the original Stanley Parable was released for money.
Yeah.
And I'm going to check that just to make sure, because I believe that was the case. The Stanley Parable was, it's like $15 on Steam right now. And it was made by Davey Reedon and and his small group, Galactic Cafe. And as of yesterday, a new version of the Stanley Parable has come out called the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe. And it is... I don't want to go too much into it because a lot of the Stanley Parable is sort of experiencing it and exploring it for yourself. It's kind of one of those games that's kind of hard to talk about for that reason. But it's very meta-narrative. It's very much about the nature of video games and playing video games. So if that's like something you're interested in, it's very funny. It's a very funny game, very well written. And the new version of the game, the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe, is made by a studio called Crows, still involved Davey Reedon and a lot of the people in the original game, of course. And they've essentially added enough stuff to the game to essentially be more or less a sequel. It's not a sequel. It's got all the stuff from the original game, but there is a lot of stuff on top of the original game, sort of like layered on top of it, so to speak. And it justifies the price of entry, let's put it that way. Even if you play the original Stanley Parable, the game has been fully remade. They fully remade the game in Unity. It's no longer in Steam. And there's some interesting stuff around that I don't want to get into, but it's very cool. It's good. And I just suggest if you really like meta-narrative, heavy, comedic games, Stanley Parable is very much down your alley.
Yes.
And Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe, even more so.
Very, very good. It's a good week for video games.
Yeah, actually. You know what came out today, right?
No.
Rogue Legacy 2.
Wow.
I know, right? This is a good day. This has been a good week for games that came out in 2013 specifically. Exactly 2013.
You know, I think last week Glover came out for the second time ever.
Yeah, but we don't need to talk about that.
I mean, a little. Glover's
we need to talk about it a little. Glover's great, but the company that re-released it, not so great.
You know what? Fair. But yeah, this is a really good week for video games. Go play Blood Hunt. If you see me on Blood Hunt, don't kill me. I'm trying to get up to number
God,
one.
God, yeah, just thinking about all this. Okay, so what? We've got Blood Hunt, Overwatch mm-hmm. 2, closed beta.
Yep.
Stanley Parable, Rogue Legacy. Yep. What else?
Oh, I'm sure I've missed something that's come out today.
There's got to be something else, right?
Or like this week. Let's see if I could do releases this week alone. Oh boy. Oh no. There's so many. Okay, hold on. So yeah, we've got the Stanley Parables, Zombie Army 4.
What?
There was a Bugsnax release for Xbox and Switch. If you haven't played that, that was a PlayStation.
Nintendo Switch Sports!
Yes, I was just about to say. Nintendo Switch Sports came out.
I heard people, it's kind of mediocre.
People apparently, think it's okay.
It's okay, yeah.
It's a good family game. So, you know, in the spirit of family games, I would
not
say.
Quite the killer app it was in 2005.
No. But it's good. And, you know, the Switch has some cool perks to playing it.
I'm sorry, 2006. Let me put some respect on the age. Sure, 2006 and 2005.
But yeah, it's a good week for video games. So check out anything. And again, if you see me in Vampire the Masquerade Blood Hunt, stay away or die for me, because I need to get to number one. I've been number six in like three games in a row, and
you know what else came out this week? Streets of New Capenna.
Yes.
Came out today, in fact, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I got the email the Magic the Gathering Arena email telling me that I opened almost 100 packs from the last one.
Good Lord. Wait, you opened over 100 Kamigawa packs?
Yeah, I was playing a lot.
Congratulations. I think you unlocked like a third of the set then.
I need more. But yeah, I'm really excited for that one. I haven't played yet. I forgot all about it.
I feel the Magic, the Gathering mania overtaking me over the past couple weeks. It's like
the card games.
I've been just like shuffling through all the cards in my desk over the past few days, just looking at them. All the
it's a fun
old
game.
And new cards that I have.
And I was looking at the art after we spoke about it last week, and I was like, God, I want this. And here it is. It's here.
Streets of New Capenna has some... Okay, honestly, Magic has always had wonderful art, but, man, Kamigawa and Streets of New Capenna... I'm a little biased, of course, because those are the first two sets that I've been playing since I started playing. Those are the first sets that have come out since I started playing, but God damn, there's some good art in Magic.
Yeah.
And I got in one of my packs that I got in my pre-release, I got one of the full art Kamigawa lands, the Umieko lands, I think they were called, something like that. And
pretty.
If you haven't looked up the Kamigawa full art lands, dear listener,
so pretty.
They are wonderful. They kind of break the format of what you might typically expect for a full art land. Instead of like having the sort of borderless border, it's got a unique banner on the side that shows the white mana symbol, and it has some Japanese text on it that I assume says plains, and the rest of it's just full art. It's so good. So good.
Yeah.
God. Even if I didn't play Magic, what was that?
I was saying to the listener, go play Magic the Gathering Arena.
Yeah. Go play Magic the Gathering Arena. It's wonderful. It's kind of free to play.
Kinda.
You're not going to get a super good collection unless you spend money. That's just kind of how it is with Magic Arena, unfortunately. But it's really good.
It's fun games.
It's a fantastic way to get into Magic. I will say this much.
Yeah.
If you've never played Magic the Gathering before and you want to learn how to play, check out the tutorial for Magic the Gathering Arena. If you don't do anything else, play the tutorial for Magic the Gathering Arena. It'll teach you how to play it, and I think you'll see the appeal. Because if you've ever looked at Magic cards before, like, if you've just been like, oh, Magic the Gathering looks interesting, but you look at a card and, like, you go cross-eyed and your brain explodes, it explains how to read cards at the very least and explains how they work and how the game works. That's a really good starting point, and that'll get you at least to a point where you can decide whether or not you actually like the game or if you just like looking at the art. my girlfriend really wants me to bring some of the Magic cards that I got from the pre-release just so she can look at the art. She does know how to play now. I did convince her to play Magic Arena, but she mostly just wants to look at the pretty art, which I not kind of feel the same way. B's great. Maybe I should have B on the podcast sometime. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how she feels about that. We'll
see how that works.
Yeah. I mean, I've had her on my stream enough times.
Well, bring her over.
Yeah, we'll see if she wants to.
We're going to take a break.
We already at that and point? God damn.
Yeah, we're at break time.
Whew.
Homie. It's good to catch up.
It's been a while since we've had a podcast with just the two of us, man. This is nice. It's chilled out.
Very nice to catch up and tell the listeners about all the games that they're missing.
Hell yeah.
Go play them. And while you do that, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a sec.
Hello, everybody. I'm Steampunk Link.
And I'm Emmy Zero.
And we are the hosts of the Snescapades podcast, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library, three games-ish at a time. We play them briefly, judge them harshly, and rank them.
As we do that, we go into the history of the games in question, who made them, when they were made, and any interesting stories that surround them. And we'll also probably sprinkle in a few bits of leftist politics here and there.
Just look for Snescapades on Anchor or your favorite podcast app. You can also check us out on honestpiranha.com. We hope to see you there. And play it loud.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the show. So, we've got some interesting news stories this week. Everything from the aforementioned Project Q, some Sony news, some PlayStation news, and some Twitch news to start us off. Yeah, Twitch is apparently looking to increase the amount of ads viewers receive and make revenue rates less favorable.
Yay!
According to a report from Bloomberg, they are looking to change their monetization model and have a few options they're looking at specifically. The first being a reduced revenue cut for subscriptions from 70% to 50%. Likewise, there is a push in the company to include more ads by giving the incentive to streamers to run them more often, offering $100 for running 2 minutes of ads, every hour. That said, none of the proposals are set in stone yet and could be completely abandoned.
Come on, Jeffrey. You really need this much more money, Jeffrey?
It is fascinating to watch Netflix and Twitch both say, what if we put more ads in our show?
Yeah.
Or in our stuff. Is that a good idea?
How much more money you need, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I don't understand this take.
It's because, like, Twitch has never been super profitable, right? It's been kind of one of those companies like Twitter, which is just, like, it sort of existed and it's sort of self-sustained, but it's never really made a bunch of money for anybody. At this point, as far as I'm concerned, somebody posted a take on Twitter that I super agreed with it. Twitch just needs to be a loss leader for Amazon, right? It needs to be, like, something that builds goodwill for Amazon, because God fucking knows they need it, and gets them more market share in just games and in the spaces that they want to. And, like, the biggest thing is, like, Twitch sells Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah.
And Amazon Prime is a huge money maker for Amazon. Absolutely. It's one of their big, because, you know, you get Amazon Prime, you get Twitch Gaming, or you get Prime Gaming, you get Amazon Prime, it makes people want to buy other stuff on Amazon. It all feeds into itself. Mm-hmm. Twitch, they need to stop seeing Twitch as a this is going to sound stupid. Twitch needs to not be such a revenue-driven organization for Amazon.
Well, it makes sense, because the appeal of Twitch is that like, you're your own boss, right? You go on there to stream and make money, not the other way around, right? Yeah. They, like, I get that they're hosting you, but at the same time, like, they have to want you to be there, you know?
Yeah. Or but also, who's the customer for Twitch, really? It's not the streamers, per se. Like, some of the lower-level streamers, like the affiliates that, like, pull in all of, like, 5 viewers a stream or something. They probably put more money into Twitch than they end up getting out of it.
Sure.
Or making more money for Twitch than Twitch pays them back. That's usually how it works out. But, like, it's all ad rev at the end of the day. That's a lot of what it is. And ultimately, all ad rev-driven services are going to have to strike a balance between how much money they make and how happy their customers are.
Sure. Yeah.
Because the more ads you show, the less happy your customers are. And if part of that equation is also punishing the people that are bringing the customers in,
yeah,
that's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to drive people off your platform.
I don't think 2 minutes of ads every hour is the worst thing in the world.
Nah, not really. I should be clear. The part about paying people to run a specific amount of ads, that's something they've been sort of doing already and they've sort of been testing out, is like, if you run X amount of ads in a Y period of time, we'll pay you this much money, regardless of how many people are watching. Yeah. That's sick. That's actually sick. Like, that's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to run ads on their stream. That's fair. I get that. I personally don't want to do that because I don't really care that much, and like, the 3 people that watch my stream, I want them to have the best experience possible. But like, for somebody who's like pulling in maybe like 15 or 20 viewers and is like growing their stream, that might be more reasonable for them, you know. They've got enough of a following that people are going to stick around and maybe potentially share their stream to other people, and you know, people that are watching know the person's got to eat. I think if you present the ads in a tactful way, you got to be like, hey, we're going to run 2 minutes of ads really quick. I got to make my money. I'll be right back. We'll play more video games. You know, as long as you're able to plan it out and, like, talk to your audience about it, that's great.
Yeah.
It's the rate cut that I have issues with. Now,
yes.
Also, one more thing I want to point out about the rate cut. That only affects the people at the very top. Because most people on Twitch below a certain sub-threshold are already 50-50. I'm 50-50 right now. Every sub that I get, $22.50 of that goes into Jeff Bezos' wallet, and $22.50 of that goes into my wallet.
Cool.
Before tax. And for streamers that are up near the top, you know, they pull in a higher volume of subs and sponsorships and other stuff. And the subs that they pull in, they have a deal worked out directly with Twitch, because the people that are high enough at Twitch, they can make unique contracts and work stuff out directly with Twitch rather than going through their, you know, their formalized partnership program. And they can get contracts where they get better splits. And I think there is a system in place that Twitch has. Don't quote me on this, but I believe Twitch has a system in place that if you get above a certain threshold of subs now, it just automatically puts you to a better split. And so if they want to get rid of that, not only is that hurting the people that are bringing in their audience, it's only hurting the people that are bringing in the biggest part of their audience. It's going to have an outsized effect on the topmost streamers on the platform, which is insane to me. Like, why would you want to hurt the people that are bringing in the most money for your platform, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I'm of two minds about it. The getting a bonus for running a certain amount of ads is fine. I have no problems with that. But cutting the pay rates for the people who are at the top of your platform, bringing the most audience members, doesn't make any sense. I don't get it. No. Twitch needs to be a loss leader for Amazon, and it feels like right now they're trying to view it as a profit driver in and of itself. And I don't think that's the right way to try and run the website.
Honestly, the only person aside from Jeff Bezos in some way, I suppose, I've ever really seen make money from Twitch and like make money from Twitch is Ninja. I mean, if we want to like quickly talk about that, like he kind of took it and ran, right? Yeah. Like he really made his mark on Twitch. I think probably made Twitch what it is. And then was like, okay, bye now. I'll see you later or never, perhaps. Never seems like a good idea. And now Twitch is kind of, I guess, trying to reclaim that former glory in a way. It just seems like they haven't bounced back in a way since he decided to leave, and now they're like, okay, well, maybe we can make money off of it now. And yeah. I'm like, I don't think so. No.
And there was, God, do you remember a while back when a bunch of information about Twitch streamers got leaked about their payouts that they were getting from Twitch? And it was like the top 1,000 streamers got their payouts numbers leaked. And it was like, the only people that made anything above $100,000 a year or whatever were like the top 300 streamers or something like that. It was like the only people that were making enough money to live off of comfortably were like the top 500 streamers on Twitch. Yeah. Don't quote me on those numbers. I can't remember what the exact numbers were. It's been a while since this happened, but it was like 0.01% of the streamers on Twitch or something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. The economy reflects itself.
And these are the people that they're cutting into.
Right.
And more importantly, the people below that who are barely making enough money to get by, or maybe are making enough money to get by, those are also the people that they're cutting into their share. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't get it. It just seems like a great way to build a bunch of ill will. Like yeah. I said, the it's not set in stone. I'd be willing to bet, especially after this leak of this proposal, that they're going to back off on it. That's what
Fingers
I think, honestly.
Crossed. What's our next story?
Well, as we said in the top of the headlines, Project Q has finally been announced by Ubisoft. The original leak came from the GeForce Now database that was hinted that the game might be coming to PC along with a bunch of others. Mm. Whatever that game was to be, but now we know. Project Q is a PvP battle arena game, not a battle royale. It will allegedly feature a low player count with various PvP modes, including a battle royale. What? Really?
Yeah,
wait, they said, so. I thought they said earlier that it wasn't going to be a battle royale. Hold up.
They apparently said that it is not specifically a battle royale, but it will include.
Okay. If I had read literally the next sentence, it will allegedly feature a low player count with various PvP modes, including battle royale. Though, as Ubisoft said, this is not specifically a battle royale.
Yes.
Game. Me reading essential.
So I think what I wanted to do with this story is, like, what do we want? First of all, what do we want from Ubisoft, right? That we haven't gotten from other PvP arena games. What do we want from yet another PvP arena game?
Well, if I said what I really want from Ubisoft, I might get in trouble at work. But what I would want from a game for Ubisoft is... what was that one battle royale melee fighter game that Epic made? Brawlhalla?
Oh, is that it?
This is not Brawlhalla. But
what are you...
It was Brawlhalla. Brawlhalla was the game I was thinking of.
Okay.
This is... At least... So literally all we have is a screenshot, right? Or this like key art.
We also have some footage from... X-Pewter got a look at the early build of the game. There's a video that accompanies it, and it looks like they're in kind of like some city. Art is very kind of Fortnite-y. And I didn't see any... Well, I saw some ranged combat, but it looks like it's mostly melee combat for this game.
Ah, it looks good. I basically just think it looks good. It's interesting. Based on that single piece of key art that we have, to me, it looks like the game is a melee game. The big thing that sticks out to me is that's Overwatch. The big thing that sticks out to me is in the key art is the dude of the Reinhardt looking dude holding that shovel jumping out of the background, and that very much screams out to me, oh, this is kind of a melee thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, look, all the weapons you can pick are, like...
Sticks and bow staffs.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, you know what? There is ranged stuff, too, actually.
There's some firework shooter-type weapon.
Yeah. Wow, this is actually my first time seeing this footage. I don't believe I'd seen this before.
X-Puter had just a little bit of time. No, you know what?
It actually does look like it's a shooter. So it's a very, like, very Splatoon vibes. It's sort of like a not-so-serious shooter. A lot of the weapons are, like, very de-emphasizing the weapon aspect of them and sort of making them look like improvised toys almost.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I can
kinda see
that.
It kind of has the energy of, like, a bunch of kids going out into the backyard and, like, throwing rocks at each other, like, using Nerf guns or something. Like instead of it being, like, this is Fortnite, we have real shotguns and real pistols. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, I'm attacking you with
a
washing machine that fires fireworks. Like, yeah. That kind of energy. It's kind of Splatoon, yeah, like you said earlier. It's got kind of a Splatoon energy to it. So, yeah, that looks cute. Obviously, it's an early development. I'd want to see more of it and figure out exactly where they're going to go with it. But I'd be interested in at least picking it up and seeing what it's about. There's that damn fly again. Based on the fact that they said their Battle Royale isn't the focus of it, but there's going to be a game mode of it, I'd be willing to bet there's a lot of Splatoon-esque game modes. Probably not like Turf War, obviously. That's a very uniquely Splatoon thing. But like maybe more arena shooter, Halo-type game modes like Capture the Flag or like Control Points, stuff like that. Especially since it looks like it's going to be like a 3v3 game, at least based on the what I was seeing in one of the videos there. Yeah, no, it looks cute. It looks fun. Just really need to see where it's going to go before I can make too much of a judgment on it, especially since, you know, there's not really anything public about it beyond that footage. And I don't know if that footage looked like it was supposed to get out either, so I'm like...
It does look very kind of like...
It does look very leaked.
Yeah, very, very leaked.
The reason I say that is because there's a lot of censored, blurred out sections on it, and usually that indicates a watermark of some kind.
Yes.
So I mean, somebody's probably censoring out a watermark to try and keep themselves safe.
It is... And at least a cursory look. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
I like that the key art includes a black guy on the front because that's not always the case.
Yeah, I described him in the bit that got dropped from the recording. I described him as a cool looking kid sitting on the bench talking to air.
Yeah, talking to the girl who's being blasted away.
Yeah, it's like he's laughing at her. He's like, hey, where you headed? Come here often.
See you later. Or bye. Not.
Or not. See you later, not so later.
It looks cool, though. Yeah. Can't wait to hear more about Project Q.
Wonder if it'll come out in this summer and try and work this fall and try and compete with Splatoon 3, because Splatoon is usually a summer game. Splatoon 1 came out in the summer, Splatoon 2 came out in the summer. The vibes are very summer, but Splatoon 3 is coming out in the fall, so
we'll see if
they try to compete with Splatoon. If I had to guess, it'll probably be another free-to-play game. Looks like kind of game that might be free-to-play. Maybe not. We'll see. Who knows? All this is speculation, of course.
The cars. Project Q.
Coming Ubisoft. Out at some point.
Happening. Eventually. You know what else is happening eventually? A preservations unit at PlayStation. That's correct. PlayStation is starting up a games preservation unit, according to PlayStation developer Garrett Fredley, who started his first day as senior build engineer on the 25th. He will begin working for the newly created preservation team. Over the years, we've seen enthusiasts and historians attempt to create their own game preservations. Likewise, over the years, we've seen Nintendo and other companies strike down those attempts, and other attempts, like ROM sites, in favor of setting up their own preservation on consoles. And also, for years, players have criticized Sony for not having a healthy game preservation system, otherwise lacking backward compatibility on consoles, or simply not having access to a full-er library of past games. Regardless, Sony seems to be trending in that direction now. There has yet to be anything official from Sony about the preservation team.
Yeah, that's always been one of the biggest criticisms of Sony, is that their consoles are generally not the best in terms of backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
Especially PS4 onward has had the biggest issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their older games tend to not be available. Probably the only company that has a worse track record with unavailability of older games is like Sega.
Yeah.
Pretty much most of the console games that existed on the Saturn and Dreamcast are, well, a few of the Dreamcast games are accessible. Sega Saturn, basically, as far as modern preservation, is in a god-awful state, and PS3 is kind of in a similar position. They're doing better about that, and based on the new stuff they've got going with PlayStation Plus, the new plans that are coming up on PlayStation Plus, it seems like they're really trying to be better about that. They're kind of taking the Nintendo and Microsoft approach of creating a Games Pass for their older games, which, I mean, this kind of seems the way the future is going with backwards compatibility and with accessibility to older games. I've talked about this on the show before. We've talked about subscription services and how we feel about that. Kind of feels inevitable that's the way things are going to go in terms of preservation and in terms of accessibility to older stuff. Intensely digital, especially as time goes on. Netflix has proven that it works for movies and TV shows. So video games are going to do it for video games. That's just how it's going to be. But I always say, as long as the subscriptions are not the only way you can access something, it's fine. These games are coming from old consoles, from older games. Eventually, they're not going to be accessible on older consoles because they're just going to be too damn expensive. They're going to be too hard to get. Everybody's going to who wants the game is going to have it, and there's only going to be so many copies around in the world. And man, it would be nice to be able to buy these games outright, but it's fine. It's not great, but it's fine. Yeah. And if Sony is starting up a preservation unit, then I wonder what that's going to entail. Does that mean they're going to be looking back at their past and trying to see what they can dig up and see what they can preserve? Is this just going forward? I mean, companies are generally much better about preservation and archiving of their data than they have been previously. It used to be, you know, people would just throw away master code once they were done with the game. Cut it, print it, we're good. We don't need that on our goddamn hard drives anymore. We have 500 megabytes to use, and we're going to use them, goddamn.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I don't think it's much of an issue as it used to be. Archiving is not as hard as it used to be. We have a lot more access to storage. So I would hope that what this means is Sony is going to look back at their library, look back at their history, and try and maybe pull forward some games that haven't got as much love. Jumping Flash?
I don't know.
Well, look it up. Is. Jumping Flash, it is. Jumping Flash was a game on the PlayStation 1 that was a really fun, wild, first-person platformer game.
Okay.
And I don't know if that game has ever been re-released.
Nobody knows about my game that was on the PS1 that was never re-released.
Yeah.
Nobody knows about it. I've never met anyone who knows about One. That's the name of the game. It's just One. It is a fun, fun game, and it was wild and crazy. It had a story and everything. It was
for the PlayStation?
Yep, PlayStation 1. Game called One, O-N-E. It's one of those, like, The story is kind of like Die Hard, right? It's like some on the run trying to stop, but he's got like a gun arm and he's shooting a bunch of robots and stuff. And it's also a platformer. Like it's got everything. The colors are crazy, big explosions, all kind of crazy stuff. It's fun. It's so fun. And nobody knows about it.
Oh, I could do a whole episode on that game. An on rails game.
Yeah. I can talk about that game for 3 hours.
Yo, this game looks sick as hell. Oh my god.
And nobody.
I just found some footage of it on YouTube and I'm watching it right now and I just. Ooh.
It is one of my favorite games. I wanted to do like a stream where I played like obscure games nobody's heard about.
I'm trying to think of what this reminds me of. Contra?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like 3D Contra.
Yeah. It's definitely got that vibes. It's one of my favorite games. And I hope, Sony, if you're listening, video game preservation unit, that you preserve this somehow.
This is still the kind of shit I'm talking about. Absolutely. Games like this.
If it is still out there somewhere, if the code still exists, please save this game. Show it to the world.
Apparently it's on Vita. Know.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, this seems like this. If they're able to port it to another console, it seems like probably got it written down somewhere.
That's a good sign. I like that. I like that a lot. But yeah, I mean, shout out to the Video Game History Foundation, a friend of the show, Frank Cifaldi, who was on one of the first episodes, really got it kicking. It's really going forward, and I'm looking forward to seeing kind of more of what they can do in the physical realm. But right now, there's a lot of kind of digital stuff that they're doing. I have a copy of a Electronic Games Monthly magazine framed up in my room.
Good old EGM.
So yeah, I mean it didn't seem like it was something to be aware of, I suppose, when video games were first starting out, and even now. But the preservation of these objects is important.
Absolutely,
it's good history in there. Lots of good history.
Definitely glad to hear that Sony is potentially... There's a fly right in front of my microphone.
Oh, my God.
Right in front of my microphone. I'm going to kill this motherfucker. Where's the fuck
you? Got it.
Nah, he's gone.
Oh. Oopsie daisy.
Man, Jace, we need to have more chill podcasts like this.
Yeah, we do.
Nice, these nice little you and me times just vibing.
You and me. Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and also we connected about old ass PS1 video games.
God, you ever want to have a special? I can just sit here and talk about old Sega games for about an hour. I in a work meeting a couple months ago, I just ended up talking everybody's ear off about old Sega games for about an hour straight.
Yep.
It was wonderful.
We do need to get back to our book club episode.
Oh my God.
We only did
one of those.
No, we did a few.
We did a few?
We did a few.
What did we do? Oh, God, I forgot.
Let's see. We've done a few.
Did we do Resi 8?
We did the playlist. We did Final Fantasy 14 up to Shadowbringers.
Yeah.
I got to go back further because that was the last one we did before the new or after the new year.
Oh, Metroid Dread.
Yep, we did Metroid Dread. We did a few. We got to do some more.
Wow, I completely forgot.
It's fine.
I've been so busy. It's been a long year, Kami Jace.
It's been a long year, but it's been a fast one.
God, it really has, fast though.
And
you know, I'm coming up on 1 year working at Blizzard now.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
what's
this,
the date?
It's like June 20th. I'm like 2 months out.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Actually, my anniversary is going to happen basically right when I get converted full-time.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a special time.
July 1st.
Beers for everyone.
Oh, I'm buying so much beer. You have no idea. I'm going to get absolutely tanked that weekend.
Super duper. As you should. As you should.
Man.
And the rest of the QA team over there.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm pulling everybody who's comfortable out to drinks, for sure.
Yay.
We're going to have a big old time.
That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah,
I'm jealous.
It'll be great. I'll try to see who can pull out their Magic the Gathering commander decks. We'll see if I can... Feels like everybody has a commander deck these days. Maybe it's just me.
I am not entirely sure what that means.
Commander is a format of Magic the Gathering where you build a 100-card deck, and one of the cards in your deck is a legendary creature. All the cards in your deck have to have the same colors that are on your commander, either in the abilities or on the mana cost. And every single card in your deck that is not a basic land has to be unique. So it is a 99-card singleton deck with a single commander, and the commander sits off to the side and actually sits in its own area called the commander zone, and you can play the card from any time from the commander zone, and whenever it dies, it goes back into the commander zone, and in order to cast it, you just have to add two any color mana to the cost every time it dies.
All right.
It's very fun.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It's currently the most popular format of Magic the Gathering, believe it or not, and it's gotten so popular that Wizards has started dedicating entire expansions just to Commander. Yeah.
Interesting.
Should check it out sometime. It's fun.
I will. I gotta play Magic the Gathering Arena again when I'm not playing Blood Hunt.
Oh, also, it's a multiplayer. It's a popular multiplayer format as well, so you can have usually four people playing against each other in Commander.
It sounds like it's also easy to like pick up and do in
person. Yeah, because there are pre-made decks that Wizard sells for it, and you can just literally buy one. Like, if you're at a local game store and everybody's like, hey, let's go play Commander, and you're like, I don't have a Commander deck, you can literally pick one up for $50. It's a pre-made 100-card deck ready to go.
Oh, super.
Yeah.
Super, super. Can't wait to go to Rite Aid and see Magic the Gathering card staring me in the face yet again.
God. It's only $5 a booster.
It's always there. Like, buy me. And I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry.
Cracking packs is so satisfying.
I used to love it in college. And I don't have anyone to get back into it with here.
I'm getting dangerously close to the point where I'm about to buy a booster box. It's staring me in the face.
Gotta do it.
Not yet, but soon. I think sometime in the next 6 months, I'm going to end up buying a booster box.
Well.
Crack some boosties.
I will be there for the funeral of your wallet.
I might stream it, actually. That could be fun.
Yeah, actually, that would be really cool.
Boosty Kraken stream. I've watched people open packs on Twitch before.
That sounds like fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun.
And like feeding off of someone's excitement.
Yeah. You know, it's usually two people. I never really watch a lot of people just opening them by themselves. I don't know. For me, at least, I found that the most fun you can have opening booster packs is when you've got at least one person with you who knows their shit like super well, and you open fucking Scrungus the Awakened. I'm just gonna steal one of my tweets. You open fucking Scrungus the Awakened and he's like, yo, that's worth like, that's a super valuable card, and you look it up on Scryfall, it's like $80.
Well, that's $80 you could have,
yeah,
in your pocket. All right, we are basically at the end of the show,
more or less.
So, tell us the recommendation you have for the listener.
All right. This week, for my recommendations, I recommend you play the Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Rogue Legacy mm-hmm. for Magic the Gathering and, of course, Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Easy peasy.
That's all you gotta do.
You know what those games are. Yeah. We spoke about it all episode.
Oh, and yeah. No, I guess I'm done. I don't know. Play those games.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Blood Hunt.
No way.
It's so fun. It is so much fun. I don't actually even know if it's fun. I just think it's fun. Because of the setting. I love like modern vampire magic stuff. That is my jam. And Blood Hunt has all of that.
God.
So check out Blood Hunt. Also check out the Crystalline Conflict. I'm really into PvP right now, so I'm willing to beat you up. It's fine.
It's really fun.
Did you end up playing
that game that you suggested last week that you hadn't played before?
Crime Site is actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
It is also a PvP. It's a lot of fun. It's like mind games, right? It's like chess. You're playing like anime chess, right? You got all these little pieces to move around in the form of like people, actual people, and you have to outwit your opponents who are either working against you or just creating chaos for the sake of creating chaos. It's a lot of fun. I truly enjoy trying to outwit other people.
It's God.
My toxic trait. So it's right up my alley. I love it. I love it a lot. I haven't played enough of it, but it was, I played a few games and it was pretty fun. And I am willing to play with friends if the time presents itself. Hit me up if that's what you want.
Hell yeah.
And finally, to finish off the episode, please let us know where we can find you on the internet and if you have anything else to plug.
As always, you can find me at Paul's Rockin' Twit on Twitter, currently privated for reasons. And as always, you can also find me at Paul's Workin' Twit if you want to see me talk about more work-related stuff, mostly Hearthstone, because that is the game that I work on. Mm-hmm. Also, you can find me twitch.tv/Bondi77, where I haven't been streaming very much lately, but I do sometimes stream sometimes. And, yeah, that'll pretty much do it for me.
Very, very, very good. All right. As always, you can find me at Comic Jace Gaming on Twitter, and you can find the Weekly Cooldown as well on Twitter at WK Cooldown. Be sure to visit the Weekly Cooldown Facebook page. Visit WKCooldown.com for more news and other episodes. Be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And remember that you can, like, for the next couple of weeks, go to wkcooldown.com/giveaways and follow the cool instructions there, and you can leave a review and then also be entered into a giveaway contest mm-hmm. to win like a ton of games.
Go steal Comic Jace's games.
Steal them. I don't want them. Please take them from me. That I have so many keys. So like that you'll get a game. I promise. Just come do mm-hmm. the thing. But yeah, either way, just leave a review. Thanks. Bye. No. Be sure to check out the links in the description, including, of course, our Humble Bundle for this week. And remember, you can support your favorite charities and support this show. Our logo and art is done by Corrigian of Doghouse Esports. Follow Corrigian at Doghouse Corrigian, DoghouseCorrigian. That's Doghouse Corrigian on Twitter. Our intro music is done by Riki. Find Riki on Twitter at dog_noise. That's DOG_NOISE. That's dog noise on Twitter for Riki. That's all for the weekly cooldown. I'm Kami Jace.
I'm Paul. There's a lot of video games. Henderson.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.